On the telephone, joining us as he does each Tuesday, it's our friend, writer Colin Fleming. Hello there, sir.
How's it going, buddy?
It's going well. How's your back? Are you doing any better?
No, I'm quite immobile at the moment. I'm sitting down, and it takes me a while to stand up. Was that 60s television show, and Uncle Joe is moving mighty slow at the junction? That is pretty much the sea dog at this point in time.
Wow. Throwing out a Petticoat Junction reference. I like that very much.
Yeah, but I'll be back. I'll be back. I'm like Joe. I'll be up and again, up and moving about again soon.
Well, we want to talk about play, but first, yeah, I know you're a Patriots guy, and my goodness, when we think we've seen it all from Tom Brady, here we go again. How does that one rank for you on the list of great Brady performances?
I don't think that I've seen it all. I simply wait for what's next. And I think about a guy like you, you ever become tempted after watching them sip for the latest time from the sweet chalice of victory for you to drink deeply, Mr. Kimball, of that Patriots brew? I thought they had a shot when they got the ball back there at the end, and there was, 2 minutes and 3 seconds left or whatever. And then I think after the run, it was like a minute 57. I have a friend who is a quintessential New Englander, albeit a displaced New Englander, who is texting me saying, there's a turnover. It's happening now. It's over. This is terrible. I'm going to go yell at my kids. I'm like, all right, well, maybe leave off with the kids yelling for a little bit, because I think he's at least going to give them a shot. My concern was that he was going to give them a shot and leave too much time on the clock. But don't you think it is so easy to score in this league when you absolutely have to have the points? I feel like almost every quarterback is going to give you a shot. It's one completion over the middle, right? Second one on the sideline. And the way these guys kick now, I know they needed more than a field goal. You're always just like right within like a 57-yard field goal. And if you're that close, you're going to have at least two or three shots at the end zone. So I don't know. It's tough for me to really also get excited about a game that comes down to, let's face it, who is going to possess the ball last? Anyone who has the ball last is probably going to win in these games.
Well, the good news is for me, I don't have the agony that goes with sitting there for those nail biters, wondering if this is the time the Brady magic doesn't work. But the bad news is, I don't get to appreciate it fully, and it's worse having grown up as a Giants fan because I don't even know what the playoffs mean.
The Giants have the Patriots numbers, of course, but. Yeah, Brady, he's Jordan, he's Gretzky, he's that kind of... I will say this, though, the Patriots. America, you owe the Patriots. I know you don't like them, but you owe them because they give you the best entertainment if you are a Patriots hater or just a non-Patriots fan. They play these immediate classic games that when you try to establish the rungs that they occupy in the ladder, you're having quite a bit of internal debate with yourself. Like, I don't know. There's other games that you don't even remember in 2006, right? Technically 2007 against the Chargers. They had no business winning that game. That was the best team I think that they've ever played that didn't ultimately win a Super Bowl. So I don't even know how you do a top 10 or a top 12, but I think the rules of the game, to use a phrase from Jean Renoir, are different when you are the best ever at what you do, and he is the indisputable best ever at what he does, and so is the coach.
Colin Fleming with us here on Downtown, and we wanted to talk about play this week, and not just play for kids, but play for adults as a concept that I think it would be healthy if more people embrace this idea. What do you mean by play?
It's certainly the season of play, because we get to this time of the year, and it's probably even colder where you are than where I am, and we hunker down. We become Pooh Bear inside the cave with our stores of honey, and we're not going out again. And I think you have to get creative in terms of, and this is a good opportunity this time of year, how you actively embrace the world. And the way you actively embrace the world is to dislocate yourself from the humdrum, to find invention in all sorts of different areas. And that's what kids do. I think that's what people who have young children like you do. You live a part of your life through their invention. Kid is always inventing, and somewhere, I don't know exactly what the cutoff point is, the shelf life, we stop doing that. We become rote, And when we become rote in our behavior, we become rote in the way we interact with the world, we become formulaic, it dulls and it limits our critical capacity to think. And you become the person who just, I'll re-upvote that. I'll hit the like button on this. I'll share this. And you're not really asking yourself questions like, wait, does that make sense? Could it be something else? People dispense with that. But when you're playing, you're always seeking to add the next level. Playing is about partaking of what is in front of you, but also constantly adding on. And we add on through intuition and through invention. And if you're not playing as an adult, I feel that you're in some ways living a kind of stillborn existence.
I couldn't agree more. And when you were talking about childhood, and I think back, I always feel like I had an advantage as an only child because... No, there were kids around, but not all the time. And often I had to come up with games of my own and play on my own. And that helps stimulate imagination and creativity. And I hope we haven't taken that away from kids today with so many other stimuli out there that they don't have to rely on looking internally for entertainment and for play options.
I think they have it for at least a while. They might not keep it until they're 12 or 13. But they have it at least through 5, 6, 7, somewhere in that ballpark. I had a run as an only child for a while, too, for about 5 years. And I remember, actually, I had a friend. He was an only child. He was perpetually an only child. He never had siblings. And his parents got him Hungry, Hungry Hippos. And he was traumatized by this because he was going around the edges of the game trying to compete against himself to devour his marbles. It also taught him a lesson in gluttony. He became very obese later in life. No, that part's not true. But you have to invent, and it's that idea of coming up with these games. And for me, our backyard was literally a place called Great Woods, which was a concert venue later on. I think it's the Tweeter Center now.
Right.
So a lot of my childhood was spent looking for black racers and garter snakes in the woods and trying to find crayfish in a brook. And I found, too, it got me thinking in such a way that on a cold day when I was inside, the games that I'd play there, play on my own or with friends, they helped me think even, I would find out later, I didn't know it at the time, but in terms of inventing with the art I would do. So whether it was building a fort, whether it was playing knee hockey in the basement, and then just computer games. I was never a big computer game person, and they have the Switches now or whatever they're called, and you can walk around with your computer games. But I remember playing Oregon Trail and King's Quest, and you have that kind of dodgy, pixelated, right, that graphic that just looks like rubbish. But to me, I might as well have been out on that trail. And dysentery setting in, and some wolves have been closing near my campfire, and I need to handle this. And damn it, I need a new axle for the stage. And I believed it in my mind. I remember saying to my mother when I read that I saw these images in my head, and I wasn't reading when I was reading something that was actually good. I was having a kind of experience. And I think that's basically what no writers are able to bring off right now in the world. But it was like a moving picture in my head that I was hovering around and I was moving like I was atop some crane, these crane shots, and I'm in and out of the picture and I'm looking at this. And it was so immersive. And later in life, when I was an adult and things got very difficult and it was hard to even keep going and to remain alive, I found that I had to rely on that same skill set of playing, whether it was just, okay, you really do not want to go on this jog today, but you're going to kick every other acorn and pretend that you're Pele scoring goals in soccer. I'd make games climbing up the monument. It's tedious. It's humdrum. I was someone who had a stroke at 36 years old. I went out to ESPN, for ESPN, up to California, and I'm in the Giants clubhouse, and I'm talking to Buster Posey, and 2 hours later, I'm on the floor of the Hyatt Regency, and I didn't even know my own name. I got on a plane and came home to finish a book before I died. Very hard times, and harder now. And I still find myself every day trying to find that impetus to play. And it's what draws me to other people. They have a kind of freshness about them where they're also questioning people, they're inventive people, and they have one of the rarest qualities in the world right now, and that's an open mind.
Well, I was fascinated by this in reading the blog because what you do when you're running, I do on my usually daily walks, and it's I wonder, is that, do you do it for the joy of play, or do you do it because of your competitive nature as somebody who played hockey at a very high level?
It's a massive amalgamation. It's so many things. It's play. It's keeping going. It's competitiveness. It's because I know that I can also create work at a level that other people have not. It's trying to overthrow an industry that's made an attempt to blacklist me and make me the pariah of it. It's so many things at once. It's to keep living. It's to live rather than exist. It's to be there in future for the person that I will ultimately spend my life with, whom I've not yet had the good fortune to meet. So there is a lot going on when I'm just kind of doing the tedium of running to Charlestown and back and three times, sets of threes for 9 miles and going up and down the monument. It's a lot of things. And I also have to outlast a lot of people. I have to not have another stroke. I have to be at a level of fitness that allows me to take on amounts of stress that would kill an Olympic runner. So I have to have all of that happening at once. And I want to retain, too, my core fundamental humanity. And that humanity is, I think, of someone who is playful. I am not a hard person. I have to sometimes do hard, confrontational, ostensibly truculent things that I do not wish to do because of corners I've been backed into. But really, when it comes down to it, I'm more of a rake hell. I'm more of a playful person. I'm more impish than people talk about sarcasm. I don't like sarcasm. To me, it's copying an attitude to be cooler than thou, and that's not for me. Play is inclusive. Even when we play alone, we're ultimately doing something where you're thinking in terms of someone else being with you. Even if that's you, you almost refer to yourself in the royal we when you play by yourself. And then when a friend comes along or a potential friend, play is a great way to cement that relationship. So it's really a lot of things for me, and it always has been, from the time when I was an only child to the time when I had two sisters to the time when I found that I could barely carry on. It's always been a central tenet of my life.
Well, and part of that has to be a willingness to open yourself up, right? To do that and to be accepting. And that has value beyond just play in making you that person that doesn't have that hard shell that can be open to other events like, you know, that woman that's going to come along for you.
We do don the shell quite often now. We are the turtle with the head inside the carapace and only every now and again sticking it out to say, all right, what's going on here? What can I click on? I think we are, as a society, by and large, from person to person, quite terrified. We wish to seem a certain way that will curry favor, what we think will be favor, with the masses. And you end up with a lot of people being depersonalized and acting a certain way that is in opposition to how they might really be. And if you act a given way long enough, it's like the Beatitudes. You become your attitude. That becomes your identity. And part of it for me is I'm always creating as an artist, and that's one of my first associations with play. We would write stories, little short stories in third grade, and that was just the assignment for the class. And I remember coming in on the bus, and I did not want you messing with me on that bus. Kids throwing things around. I am all locked in because I am drafting this bad boy, and the prose is going to be at like the finest third grade level there's ever been. And I would finish my story faster than anyone else in the class by like 20 minutes. And I'd get sent to the back because the teacher didn't know what to do with me. No, this guy again, he's already done. And I would read Jack London novels, and I would read Peanuts. And what do you see when you read Peanuts? You see Snoopy. And what is that dude always doing? He is like the beagle master of play,
yes,
right? He's
yep.
always up to something. He's never bored. And you think in Snoopy's world, there is always more life than there was the day previously. And it accrues. It adds up. So I thought, I get that dog. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Great advice from our friend Colin Fleming. Check out all of his work at ColinFlemingLit.com. Thank you, my friend. Play well. Hope that back's feeling better soon, and we'll check in with you next week.
Another layer of Ben Guy.
There you go. Colin Fleming here on Downtown.